found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey everybody, Jason here, back with the after show part two. I know it's going to be a longer one than the normal after show with Andrew Maroli. He is the co-founder and managing partner at BuyAUM. Andrew, how was part one for you?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I like the format where it's kind of let's see where the car goes versus here's the lane, stay in it. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I told you in the pre-show before we hit record, kind of my style. I just want to have a good conversation. Whatever value comes up, whatever interesting insights come up, let's do it. I don't try to chokehold it. I think I told you that I was once a guest on a show where the co-hosts were scripted. Mine was mostly scripted. Their response to my response was scripted, and their laughing at my comments was scripted, and it was just like, that sucked to even just be on. So I try to do the opposite and just have it be like, just a fun, let's just see where it goes, right?
Yeah, you know? I love it.
All right. So in the first part, and for people tuning into this, please make sure to check out the first episode. It was so amazing. I take notes every single time I'm hosting a show with someone because I just learn a lot and I just love learning. I think it's fascinating and fun. There was a ton of things that I wrote down. Like I showed you, Andrew, my notes after that first one. I was like, there was a lot in there. So please, everyone, check that out. We'll also have Andrew's links. We'll talk about them at the end. But let's pick up where we left off, which is the deal that got away. So this is the, you know, I refer to it as the lessons of the lost deal. These are the unfortunate deals that either don't close or die some terrible deaths and have to be revived unnecessarily. And so in your world, with what you do and focus on with the financial advisors and these institutions, you know, what comes to mind as a story or a lesson from a bundle of stories? I can only imagine, right? It's just one of those things when you're in a sales and or business broker environment, it just happens.
It does. It really does. And we lost a deal last year that was ours to lose, and we lost it. And my takeaway from that was to be more of an active role. Like I'm a introducer at the end of the day, right? I'm a financial matchmaker. Here's buyer and seller. And a lot of our in between the first and last introduction or first introduction in a closed deal is back channeling and how'd you like them and where you're thinking about evaluation and blah, 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 right? I took a more passive role in this deal because I anticipated and expected the buyer to lead it. It's his, like, you're getting married, so you should plan the wedding. Not the right attitude to take, and we changed internally. It's one of the things I think is really important is to be reflective on mistakes that you make, and the deals that don't happen are usually where you can glean a lot more of what should I have done better from those. And this was one where it just took, the seller had a timeline in mind. He wanted to sell by the end of 2025, it was last year, and the buyers were traveling and then not communicating and didn't do evaluation, and it just kept dragging on and on and on. And so like my energy was spent keeping the seller in the boat instead of taking an active role and saying, okay, buyer needs seller information put in this spreadsheet. I'm just going to freaking do it. Right. It was like 3 weeks and we're waiting for the buyer and I'm going, hey, where are you guys at? Have you done this? I should have just rolled up my sleeves, got up at 4, worked for like 5 hours and put all of these cells into the spreadsheet. And so that was a big learning moment for me. I play the closer role within our business. We have a small team. There's 5 of us, each in like a kind of a different department, very much economies of scale. And that was a huge learning point for me of going, like my father-in-law always said, overserve, not from like, you know, I'm overserved alcohol, but overserve as in like you know, make dinner for the family, clean up, do the, like, overserve your guests. Yeah. And we really take that approach with our buyers is overserve. And yes, we have a scope of work defined in our agreement. And a lot of times, am I training people to expect more service than they pay for? Probably, right? But you know, I'd rather overserve than sit back and go, Jason, where are we at with this valuation? And it's been 3 weeks. Oh yeah, I need to get to that. It's like, just freaking do it yourself. So that was a deal that was, it was 100 mil in AUM. Would have been a nice payday, you know, a good buyer and seller. And ultimately the seller went with someone else that wasn't within our network because they were on the ball and they got things mm-hmm. done and they had a team. So that's another kind of aspect where we changed is I need someone that's not a lead advisor that is focused on acquisitions because there's just too much on that person's plate, right? So yes, I can overserve and do probably more than they bargained for, more than our scope of work from helping, you know, facilitate these sorts of things. I'm not ever going to do the valuation and say, you need to pay X for this business. It's not what we're into. It's like, if you're getting married, I don't want to force you into a deal, like pay what you want. Right. If you win the deal, great. If you lose the deal, great. It's up to you. But what I can do is help facilitate your thought process, how you're interpreting stuff, fill in spreadsheets, what have you. So the deal that got away was, I don't think it was laziness. I think it was expecting others to do what I expect them to do, which isn't always the case. So, yeah, if there's something to be done and you're waiting on someone to do it, just do it yourself. Like, that's the big lesson.
Yeah, and it's an interesting balance there. And I know you just said it wasn't about being lazy, and I don't think it was. You know, I think sometimes, I think probably the nicer way that I can think of in my mind is that, you know, people will define their role and here's my scope and this is what I do. In your case, you said you're the closer. Somebody's like, I do this, and other people are responsible for X, Y, and Z. And so it's not a, that's not my job mode. It's just a, you're doing your part and I'm going to do my part, right? The negative side is like, that's not my job. But in this case here, it's just like, and then learning that lesson of like, sometimes it might break the rule, might break the calculation and formula of what the, you know, your time is worth and the value of your time. But sometimes you just got to do it, right? There are times. Don't make a pattern. Don't make a habit out of it. Solve it for next time. Bring in a resource, figure out the hook that can help you with that. But like, sometimes you just got to do it. Sometimes I just have to build a website, right? Or sometimes I have to, you know, do some stuff for our clients and it's like, I'm doing it. And I know that I shouldn't be doing it, but I'm doing it because it needs to get done, right? And you just, you can't, you know, be so strict on what you focus on. And I think that's great. And I think that's important because, you know, you're dealing with humans and humans, let's say your buyers, your sellers, they got stuff going on. They're not doing what they need to. Some people really don't like doing homework. And it's like, sometimes you just got to do it for them.
Do it for them. Yeah. And you know, it's the other thing is because of the number of occurrences that we are on, like I've been on more intros than any of our buyers because I'm on all of them, you know, I've worked with more sellers than any of our buyers because we work with all of them. And so I think the reality is that we know better than the buyer, ultimately, how to send the follow-up. Thank you for your time, Jason. It was a pleasure getting to know you yesterday. These are the, you know, X's that I heard, the things that we're trying to solve for. I really look forward to our next conversation. Like, I know how to write that email better than the buyer, and I'm more focused on it because I'm not focused on 10 other things. So, like, maybe I should just write it for him and say, hey, Jason, why don't you send this to Steven today or rewrite it however you want, right? So there's those little things that I think could be seen as outside of my scope of work. You do it. It's your acquisition. You're the one getting married. You should send the follow-up email. But the reality is I know what the seller needs to hear more than you do. So like now it becomes my secret sauce. Yeah. Now it becomes where I get renewals from. You know, it's like I want to, and this is kind of a crude thing, I want to hook our buyers on our heroin. Like I want them not being able to function from a growth perspective without buy AUM. How do I do that? I overserve and like, introductions, but I want them so accustomed and appreciative of everything that we do to make their life easy so that they go, of course I'm going to renew. This is great. Let's keep it going. And
yeah,
a lot of that comes from going above and beyond.
Yeah. And it's interesting because you use the term overserve, right? And then with what you were just saying there towards the end, to me, the other version too is servant leadership, right? Where a good leader is a servant to everyone underneath, right? A good leader is not a manager. A manager and a boss is like, I'm here and you're down here and my job is to like leverage you and get you to do things, right? A leader, people want to follow. And in my opinion, servant leadership is the best, which is I'm going to serve all of you so you can do what you need to do, which then just collectively helps everybody. So your templated email follow-up that you give as a toolkit to the seller, to the buyers, right? And in previous version or other modes, it's called a swipe file, which is like, here's this, here's everything that you need, swipe whatever you want, make it your own, but here's a basis for it, right? That's actually serving them to help them succeed, which is ultimately helping your sellers succeed, which is ultimately helping you succeed. And so it's just a part of that piece to just facilitate it. And I love that, you know, that's a thought process. And here we are, we're talking about business brokerage, we're talking about all things, but like, it's so valuable where business brokers listen to this, even business owners listen to this, like, how do you just make things extra, extra easy for your clients and remove all friction, because people hate friction. And in this world, we expect zero friction in everything. Like I can grab my phone and order something and it'll be here by this afternoon. I never have to leave the house. And like anything beyond that just sucks. And I don't want to deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the, like, I think loyalty is gained in many different ways. And being a servant leader is how you be, what's the book? It's like you get raving fans.
Raving like fans. Yeah.
Well, it's like, that's how you create raving fans, is going above and beyond. But for you, that's your baseline. Like that's what's demanded. And I always tell our team, like, I demand a lot from all of them, but it's because I demand a tremendous amount from myself. Like,
yeah,
you know, my conversation with our ops team on Monday was about time blocking, and I was showing one of our cold callers his calendar is time blocked every minute. Like, wake up, make breakfast, calling East Coast, go for a walk, like the whole day, all the way to make dinner, go to bed. And I'm like,
wow,
this is overkill, but you know, he's not everything time blocked. So how much more efficient could we be? And like, I'm not just answering emails, or we did a time study for the executive, the whole company. Every 15 minutes, we had a timer go off. Every 15 minutes, you write down, what were you doing for the last 15 minutes? And it's, and I told the whole team, I'm not auditing what you're doing. I don't think that you're not doing enough. And I'm trying to like piggyback and be eyes over the shoulders to make sure. It's how can we improve? What are the efficiencies? When do I need to cluster the email sending or responses? And
this
whole like, oh, I responded within 30 seconds to this email. Oh, yeah. Well, what were you doing before that? That then you respond and then you get up, you go get some water, and you go, you see Steve in the hallway, and you talk to Janet, and then you come back and you're like, it's lunchtime. You know, it's like, oh, I'll do it tomorrow. When in reality, if you just would have said, I look at emails at 3 p.m. Finish what you were doing. So that's I told the team on Monday, I'm like, I'm saying this to you. I'm also saying it to myself. And I said, next Monday, I have a 30-minute sync with our ops team every Monday. I'm like, we're all going to present our time blocks and I'm going to present mine first. So
those are always brutal. Those are every time I've done that. And as you're talking about, I'm like, I know I should do it, but I really don't want to know, like based on how my week has been, because I know I have just lost a lot of focus time on just multiple.
One thing I heard one time was, I'm not a chess player, I'll just say that, but they have those like chess timers where it's like you hit it and it times on one side.
Yep.
Is to like, left side is work, right side is break, left side is work or whatever. And so like when you're at your desk, it's like on work mode and it's counting up. And like, if you got to go take a break, cool, take a break. But like, how long were you gone? Was that 5 minutes or was it 28 minutes? That's a very like, ooh, I don't know if I want to do that, because I worked for 8 hours today. It's like, but you really only clocked 3.5 hours of actual work. So yeah. I don't know. That's another like scary exercise to do with yourself, but I've seen it.
And that one's a fascinating one if you're in an office, because there's a lot of distractions. I remember working for an owner once where his goal, he told me, he's like, if I could get each person to actually give me about 5 hours of work a day, and he's paying for eight, I would be, the business would be so successful if I could just actually get 5 hours of work out of people a day. Right now I have the opposite. So working from home, I barely go, like, I go downstairs for food and beverages. And there's a reason why I don't have a fridge in the room where I work, because otherwise I would never leave. But that's it. Like, go down, grab something, go down. Like, I'm the opposite. My issue is that they got this email open. I got this email. I got the Slack. I got the WhatsApp. I got this. I got that. It's as much as I close them down, they pop up. So that's my Achilles heel. Like, when you're talking about what did you do in that 15 minutes, the responses I know that don't matter in the moment. So, all right, let's shift. Let's start talking about some of like the standard questions I asked in the after show. And the first one here, and obviously you have the model you've built, which I think is fascinating. And I love it for so many reasons, right? There's what you're doing for the sellers, how you're serving them, is your client is really the buyer. So if it's successful, that's you know, it's something they're paying for. And then you're, you know, the super niche focus that you've got. But if we talk about business brokers for you and in general, and we look 5 years out, so 2031 right now, we're halfway through 2026. What do you think it will take for business broker, M&A, intermediaries, yourself and others included, to be successful in 5 years from now?
I think speed is the first one that comes to mind, whether it's speed to lead or like speed to lead is one, right? I think the other is, what type of value, how are you using AI to make your life easier, to scale your business, to keep margins high, to produce high quality work, all of that. So like, how has AI been integrated into your business that makes you better than those that over the last 5 years have not been integrating AI? I think ultimately too, it will be like top of the funnel leads. How are you getting leads? This is something that keeps my partner and I up at night, is we're a cold calling company. Most of our leads come from cold calls. Now, I also believe in like, pick one channel from one avatar, one acquisition source, do that until you're at a million a year, and then branch out, right? So we are cold calls to financial advisors in the independent space. That is our bread and butter. We're getting to the point now where it says, okay, we've hit that metric. How else are we getting leads, right? Is it content? Is it ads? Or is it, you know, Facebook ads or what have you? I think the future is, no one really knows where that's going to go, but finding a way to get top of the funnel leads in when AI screeners on iPhones is like just hang out, right? It makes it much harder for a cold caller. We've seen the hit rate on bookings go down from like maybe 3% to like half of 1% or 1% on our calling team. If I make 100 dials, how many meetings am I booking, right? That's gone down because there's more of this AI screeners and that becomes more regular. And so how are you adapting and staying ahead of the curve for inbound leads and winning deals at the top, right? So like, that's, I think, one important thing. If you're still in business, if you're successful in 5 years, you will have cracked that code and you are efficiently continuing to fill the funnel. Second of all, you're able to produce a high quality work product, whether that's a qualified seller or whatever that is. And this is agnostic of industry. You're able to create a high quality work product faster and cheaper than your competitors. Right? We have a 5-person team and we've integrated AI. That has been a huge initiative this year. We've put a significant amount of CapEx into connecting all of our different systems through AI and different stuff that I don't really know how to do. We hired people to do it and it works. So like, great. but it allows us to say, okay, we could 5 or 10X the amount of leads and deals that are coming through our pipeline without having to hire more people. Right. So all of a sudden you look at the margins. Okay, we could have a tremendously profitable business with 5 employees because all of this other stuff is being done robotically or with AI or what have you. So those are the two areas that I think in 5 years, if you're still successful as a business broker, you've integrated into your business.
I think it makes sense. I think all that is so important.
If you're listening to this and thinking, I need this level of authority, I just don't have time to build it, that's exactly what Business Broker Growth does for you. Most brokers know that they need consistent content, better positioning, and real digital visibility. They just don't have the bandwidth to create it or the systems to keep it going. That's what we do here. We build that whole thing for you. The content engine, the visibility strategy, and the authority signals, everything we've talked about here on the podcast. So if you want to add impact without adding another full-time job to your plate, go to businessbrokergrowth.com to learn more about what it could look like for your business.
I think it makes sense. I think all that is so important, especially the evolution and understanding of the marketing side, right? So the top of funnel, what's working, how do you max that out before going another direction and or understanding that it just changes? Especially like you said, with the cold calling and, you know, where does that become more challenging as, like we started out in the beginning of part one, when we were talking, right? Like you have the right to call people, they have the right to not answer. And fundamentally there's more defense than there is offense right now when it comes to phone calls and things like that. There's the same or more defensive technology and strategies that somebody has to never even know that you called them. And so, like, you know, understanding that game and what game can you win at and what's the economy scale. And then I love the fact that you said too about the AI, the technology, any of those pieces to make it so that you can scale, because scalability in a business is if I double inputs, I don't have to double the costs to produce double widgets, right? Or five times the widgets. It's how do I get, like you said, economy of scale, but, you know, incremental costs and then exponential, you know.
It's hugely important, right? If it costs me $50 to produce $100 of revenue, does it still only cost me $50 to produce $1,000 in revenue? Or is it 500? Right. Like, those are widely different businesses and they're valued very, very differently. And so we've taken the approach is like, how do I scale to $10,000 of revenue and keep my fixed costs at $50? That's the business I want to be building that you couldn't build 10 years ago, 5 years ago, like it didn't exist. And so I think too, along those lines, however, like I built systems. I built work product and deliverables. Then I trained people on how to do those. And they did that. Now we've brought in AI to do it for us. I didn't start by saying, hey, ChatGPT, what should my work product be? How should this look? Like, so I think there's something to be said too about like roll up your sleeves and do the nitty-gritty work, then figure out how to teach someone else to do it so that you know, like, it's repeatable. If I can teach a human how to do it, then I can probably teach a computer how to do it. But if it's just in my head, or I don't even know what I'm trying to produce, saying, well, let's integrate AI is like, well, what is it doing for you? And so we started with like version one with all of our deliverables. I built them. I refined them. I listed out the SOPs. I taught someone how to do it. They taught someone else how to do it. Great. Now it's off my plate, but it's still costing the business and my ops team, you know, 9.5 hours of work per seller to create these four documents. Now it's down to it's 10 minutes of proofing per document. Like, wow, tremendously scalable, right? But I didn't start by saying, dear ChatGPT, what would be impactful for a seller? It was like my brain, after having gone on 1,000 of these intros, how do we keep the, like that blueprint that we talked about in the first section, that's something that I came up with and I spent hours with, and we have, you know, 30 pages, it's templatized now and it's repeatable. But like the first 10 or 50, I was making line by line. So you can't get AI to do the hard creative work for you, which I think a lot of people in this low friction is like, make my business, design my website, come up with, like, do it all for me is not like do it yourself and then have it do it for you after you've done it is what I would say.
Yeah. And as you're talking about that, I'm thinking of another, you know, important thing, especially from a sales and marketing strategy, which is to make sure that you're not creating a solution that's looking for a problem, right? Like one of the worst things you can do in a business is I think everyone's going to love this and you make it like field of dreams mode and you're hoping that people want it versus like, you know, using your example with your, what your dad went through is like, here is a problem that needs a solution versus here's a solution that needs a, that, you know, and I just need to find people with this problem. I feel like that's kind of a model that people are doing a lot with AI and technology, which is I watch videos about Claude and about this and about that. And it's like, now let's figure out what to do with it. It's like, no. Where is my business not as efficient as it could be? What's, you know, a repeatable process? And then how do I buy a tool or put a tool in place that fixes that instead of like, let me just go to Home Depot and buy a whole bunch of tools and then figure out what I should build.
Even more like, does your business work? When we started BioUM years ago, our initial value proposition was a high monthly retainer and zero commission. Because we're like, all these people are getting, you know, these massive commissions. What if we could just create a retainer recurring revenue model where you pay $15,000 a month, we guarantee, you know, 5,000 cold calls on your behalf, you close the deal, you owe us nothing. What a great model. That's amazing. We're genius. And then we pitch it to like 20 people and they're like, no. And we're like, hold on, let me show you the math, right? If you do this and then, and this is obviously much cheaper for you. And they're like, yeah, but I don't mind writing you a check for $300,000 because I know I'm getting the business.
And right.
Like, oh, shit. Okay. Well, let's change, right? So it's like, we could have developed the slickest modeling platform and then brought it to market and nobody likes it. So I think early on you have to test. And like we had a Canva slide deck that we're booking buyer appointments and pitching them like 17 different pricing models that we kept tweaking and tweaking. And finally, one of the buyers that we were on with live calls, we got told no 25 times to this model, said that like, look, guys, I don't mind writing you a check for $250,000. If I know I'm getting the business, I have an issue paying you $10,000 a month when there's no guarantee that I'm going to get this. I'm like, okay, let's pivot. Right. So I think that's the part that a lot of people overlook is they make their money on a spreadsheet and they go, this is going to be great. People are going to love it. And I'm going to be a millionaire in 6 months. It's like, well, does anyone actually want what you have to sell? And is the way that you're like, people want what we were selling. They just didn't like it in the packaging that it was. And so tweaking the packaging until it's like, oh, yeah, okay, I love that. And now we started having all the success with buyers saying, I want it. It's the same widget. It's just packaged differently. And I think too many people develop businesses in a silo in their office, in their bedroom, and think that it's going to be successful and spend a ton of time and money building a website and all this stuff before they just pitch it to 20 people and see what people love and hate. Build it what the market wants. Like there's got to be buyers for whatever you're selling.
Yeah. And I think wrapping that to two things that we've talked about. One is the use of AI and technology is, and also what we said in the first part, which is, you know, a lot of people want to get into entrepreneurship and take an elevator to the top. It's like, it doesn't do any good to apply AI and technology to something to go 100 miles an hour in the absolute wrong direction. Right? Like you got to make sure you're going in the right direction first and then go faster. It's like that analogy in the image of a ladder, but the ladder's on the wrong wall. Like doesn't do any good to just go fast. Like there's some proving and testing out. You got to go fast to just, you know, make mistakes quick and learn fast. And then there's, you know, using the technology to go even faster or just like abdicate it to technology instead of actually running the business. And then I think that's where people, you know, are getting in trouble or could get in trouble. So if you look at right now, it is middle of 2026 You look at like say, the next 6 months for the rest of 2026, maybe even to 2027, which is crazy to say that. What are you excited most about with the business, especially with everything you've done, how far you've come, the evolution of things? Like what are you excited about, let's say, in the next 6 months?
I'm excited about, everyone on our team set goals at the end of last year, and we are on pace to hit our goals in many avenues of that. So I'm excited about the success that will come from doing the hard, boring work every day. I'm staying focused on the set of stairs. It's working, right? This is going to be a record year for the business. So I'm excited about that. I am really excited to see us be able to scale with all of this AI infrastructure and operations that we've, I mean, this was an initiative from March, April, and May. May, we started having some of the stuff go live initially. Today is actually when it's the first week of, it's already July. We had some of this stuff going live. So I'm excited to see that all kind of come to fruition. The first step was like connect all of our systems and be able to produce some of our deliverables with this LLM and AI in our templates. And then our ops team is just quality assurance. So like that's done. Version two is like the greater intelligence. And so we're aggregating all of the data that we have to be able to query it of like, what does make a seller transact? Like, what are the things that we're not picking up on? What makes a buyer really excellent? So I'm excited to see how that informs our executive team on where to make decisions and move the business. I'm also really excited to, we're beginning to branch into a new channel, right? I said, until you're at a million, do one avatar, one way. That's been cold calling. I'm excited to see where and how effective SEO and ads and like all of that comes. I'd love it if we had, you know, sellers coming to us from cold calls and just ads that have found our website and booked a meeting. And those are a couple of things I'm excited for. The other is just like seeing the team. Like one of our cold callers had a baby in February of this year. He's trying to buy a house in the next year. He gets a cut of the commissions that he brings in. I'm excited to see him be able to close on a house. You know, our ops teams is offshore. Two great ladies that work with us full time. I'm excited to see them like be able to provide for their families. And so really just kind of like the fruits of our labor, the whole team works tremendously hard and we've bought into that go up the stairs kind of mentality. But I'm excited to see some of the benefits that come from focusing on our goals to be able to just have everybody's lives, you know, better a little bit. I love the success stories of our sellers and like the more happiness that we bring. Like we've got a seller that is in LOI right now. He's on the East Coast. He had a business that was very different than most financial advisors. His clients were pensions. And so it was like, you know, a police department pension and this and that. And $350 million in AUM, right? Big book. He had dozens of people knocking on his door saying, and we'll call him Steve. Hey, Steve, I want to buy your business and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, great. I had two partners die in 2020, like within 6 months of each other. Now I run the business alone. I'm 65. I don't have a successor. My wife retires next year. I want to travel the world. But like I owe it to these pension plans because I'm managing.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, great, I'll buy your business and move it over to Schwab. And he's like, that would completely destroy my business, right? Like that's not how this works. So I love the success story of him answering a phone call from one of our callers saying yes to a 30-minute meeting. Our team listens to what he's looking for. We set him up on a few intros. He finds someone that actually understands what he does. He's in Ireland right now after having just signed an LOI for a great purchase price. I won't say it, but it's significant. And he's like, I'm going to go to Ireland, have a great time, right? And so I love the success stories that come from what we're doing. It goes back to in part one where I talked about, I used to call advisors and say, let me tell you about this great investment you should put money into. And now like the result of this are folks being able to retire. And we had a guy in the Pac Northwest look at a deal that he signed and go, wow, my retirement is going to be very different than I thought it could be, to the positive. And it's just like, yeah, oh, like what a great emotional thing to be able to facilitate for folks. So I always love stacking those success stories up.
Yeah. And I love that. And I think it's, you know, everything out there is sold, right? Like everything is sold and or marketed at some degree. And right. So everything is valuable. But when you find something you can be a part of where it is truly impacting people, one part of my personal and professional mission statement is to leave people better than I found them. And so like in the stories of what you're talking about, like when you get to do that, that makes up for the boring part, like you've mentioned several times, like the boring day-to-day, just doing the boring stuff over and over again. And then also, you know, the struggles and the challenges and when things don't work out, but like the successes help. Because, you know, it's a truly important thing to the people you're helping on both sides, right? To the sellers and the buyers. So I think it's amazing. You have a great list of things to be looking forward to. I'm excited to hear more. Stay in touch, get some updates from you. Maybe we can share those on the show down the road. Maybe how did it go in the rest of 2026 episode into next year. For people tuning in, I know we mentioned this in the first show. Please get in touch with Andrew. You can find his information. So again, the website is buyaum.com. You can find him on LinkedIn. His email will be in the show notes. LinkedIn will be in the show notes. Lots of great content on his website. Andrew, thanks for staying with me today, getting into more in the part two, sharing the struggles of the deal that got away and being vulnerable with that and all the stuff that we've talked about. It's meant a lot to me and I appreciate it. And I know it's going to be valuable to the people tuning in. So thank you for all your time and energy today.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Jason. It's great to get to know you. And yeah, I look forward to it. Let's do a recap. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we'll do it for sure. And everyone tuning in, thank you for your support. One of the things I mention all the time on the show and just in general is that M&A intermediary business brokers generally has a awareness and an education problem. People just don't know it exists. They don't know what they can do. Things like Andrew does specifically for financial advisors. I can only imagine how many of them don't even know they can exit, don't even know what they should get, don't even know what it sells for. And so that's why I do this show, is to bring people like Andrew on and just put more content out there. So if you got value from this, like it, share it, spread the word. Let's get more of this out there just to help raise the levels of what people know is possible for them as a business and selling, and then also buyers. And so appreciate you being here. And as always, until next time, stop hoping for deals and start growing your pipeline.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.